Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. We have quite a bit to get to tonight. Once again, this is another week where, let's face it, I didn't really make an actual list for tonight. But we will cover the NHL trade deadline, which is expected to be this upcoming Wednesday or Thursday, I believe. I forget exactly which.
Is it Thursday, Lou? I believe it's Thursday.
Okay, because I keep forgetting. Usually it's during the middle of the week whenever it comes up. We'll also have some spring training coverage to talk about as well this week, as well as maybe perhaps a bit of coverage on the NFL draft, because of course we do have the combine currently taking place this weekend. Matter of fact, Xavier Worthy did set the record for the 40-yard dash. I think it was 4.31 or 4.21 that he officially ran.
It might have been.
So
I think I can't catch much.
Yeah. Xavier Worthy out of Texas. Yeah, it was an unofficial 4.22, but I think they marked it as 4.21. So. That is the official record now for at least for wide receivers. I don't know exactly what the other standings might be. But, you know, I figure this is probably going to be potentially a hockey-filled podcast because we do have a lot of news surrounding the world of professional hockey, the NHL. In particular,
what's up the puck?
We also have Diane on the line. How are you doing, Diane?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. And you know what? We actually do have some New Jersey Devils information. In particular, if I can get this up here correctly, the New Jersey Devils were. Apparently, I don't know if they're still interested, but they have been linked to the Nashville goaltender UC Saros. And,
yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, and it says here that they've been linked to him, but. Apparently there's a catch because it'll be a sky high price that the Devils would have to give up. The Predators though have told. What's that?
They also have a trade with the Avalanche.
Oh yes. Hang on. I need to. For some reason, you know, I'm trying to get the up here, and the story that I had originally, I don't know why it just completely disappeared. But they did make a trade with the Avalanche, acquiring a winger / defenseman Curtis McDermott from the Avalanche in exchange for their 7th round pick this year. And the signing rights to center prospect Zakhar Bardakov. This is basically just a depth move, essentially, for the Devils. I would say, if anything, they have been having problems when it comes to injuries. I would say that This is more of a fourth line type of move because he does skate on the left side. So you're probably looking at either a fourth line left winger, or if he's used as a defenseman, he can also be used as a defenseman. This is his third NHL team that he's been on, spending 4 years with the LA Kings before joining the Avalanche in a trade in 2021. And he was actually briefly a member of the Seattle Kraken. What?
Oh, I have some hockey news. Can I say it?
Well, yeah, sure. What is it?
Okay.
The Blues beat the Wild 3-1.
Wow, you know, that's one thing too. The Minnesota Wild have actually been on a bit of a slump, quite frankly, over the last few weeks. I mean, with Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, net, it's kind of surprising. But I believe this now puts the Blues firmly ahead of the Wild in the standings. As they inch closer to a potential playoff spot. The Blues are now firmly in fifth place in the Central Division. They're actually tied, I believe, with the Nashville Predators with 64 points, assuming that these officially get updated. But speaking of scores, with the 3-1 score, we do have other finals around the league as we have 13 games on tap tonight. The Winnipeg Jets with a 5-3 victory over the Carolina Hurricanes. The Jets are another team that have fallen off for some reason after such a hot start to the year.
Let me ask you about the Jets. I mean, they seem to be on a winning track and everything, yet they don't seem to draw a crowd, and now they're in the process of maybe relocating yet again. I mean, how do you explain a team that does so well but can't seem to draw flies?
You know, I think with the Jets, I think their problem is not necessarily the fan base. I think it's the fact that they have incompetent. They're one of those teams that has incompetent management, and the reason why I say that is because. You look at certain trades that they've either made or that they could have made, and you know they keep players like Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuck, who you know has clearly stated previously that he would be open to a move elsewhere. You know, and they just signed both of those players to like 8-year extensions. So it's with the Jets. I mean, granted, let's keep in mind, you know, the standings can fluctuate, and they are technically on top of the Central Division still. They're tied with the Dallas Stars, but you know, I guess it's just one of those cases that. You know, maybe you take a look at if you take a look at Canadian hockey in general. You know, they got the Maple Leafs, they got the Canadiens, the Senators, they got the Winnipeg Jets, they got the Vancouver Canucks and Edmonton Oilers and Calgary Flames. You know, you take a look at where all these teams are located, and you know there may be certain fans that'll say, you know what, I don't know if I want to go to a Winnipeg Jets game. Maybe I, because the Vancouver Canucks are all of a sudden red hot. You know, maybe I want to go to a Canucks game, or maybe I want to go to an Edmonton Oilers game. You know, it's not necessarily. I wouldn't say that the on-ice product has anything to do with it because it's far from it. You know the.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in first place in their division. What more can you ask for from the team?
Nothing.
I think it's more of a case of maybe perhaps fans are kind of pissed off with how management has handled this team.
Okay. I'll buy that. I mean, I don't
That's one
how,
thing that...
I mean, because I don't think you got a winning product with you right now, and yet you're not supporting the team, and like, you know, is it me, or is there something that doesn't make sense here?
Yeah, I mean, it could just be potentially that maybe they're having a down year when it comes to fans attending games. I mean, if you take a look at different teams, you know, it can fluctuate from year to year. So maybe ticket prices have gone up and fans aren't willing to pay those type of prices. It could be a number of things.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I'm just thinking, as the average, you know, if it was a losing team, say like Chicago, no offense, you know, who's only won 15 games the whole season, I can't blame those fans not showing up, because you want to go see a team that's, you know, a pile of trash. I mean, a good team, you want to be able to go. I mean, you know, just doing your own thought averages here. You know, a team that's trash, no one wants to see anyway. But a team that is good and you're not seeing, that's kind of shocking. And I think it represents a sad state for the game.
Yeah, you know, it could potentially be that, because you have to keep in mind that when you're in management, you're basically playing a continuous game to keep fans interested, to keep fans invested.
Right.
So if you're management and all of a sudden, you know, say you're raising ticket prices, like kind of like the Boston Red Sox, for example, you know, the Boston Red Sox,
right.
They are coming off of a horrible season. And what do they decide?
Right.
Oh, we're going to raise ticket prices instead of lowering prices, if we're not going to field a competitive team, we're just going to raise ticket prices instead. This could be something similar with the Winnipeg Jets. It could be something with the Winnipeg Jets where, you know, you're looking at them with a case of maybe perhaps say ticket prices have been raised so high that
right
you may find fans potentially looking elsewhere, like, oh, well, let's see what the Edmonton Oilers ticket prices are, or let's see what the Toronto Maple Leafs games are going for, you know, like I said, the Vancouver Canucks. So it's kind of complicated when it comes to management, because it could be a number of things. It could be fans aren't satisfied with the ticket prices, fans mm-hmm. aren't satisfied with the state of the arena. Maybe fans have to pay too much to not only get into the game, but they have to pay too much in order to, buying concessions or stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, it could be a number of things. Let me bring in Alex. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets, how they've formed such a competitive team, but yet apparently the crowds aren't showing up, despite them fielding such a competitive team. What do you think the problem might be when it comes to Winnipeg?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Steve. Hope everyone's doing well. And it sounds like you know, it takes a little while for people, if they're kind of turned off, to get them back involved and get them back really believing in the product, right? So I don't think it's going to happen overnight, even though they put a really solid lineup and a good product on the ice. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but their attendance has been down in recent years, right? So it's not going to happen. It's not like turning back a lamp, you know, back on. You're not hit flipping the switch. It's going to take a little while for the fans to really turn back on their interest level and to actually show up and for attendance to get back to where they want it to be. I think fans are a little turned off and a little skeptical, and it's going to take a little time. They're not just going to show up in droves like, you know, the first few months they play well, I think.
Yeah, and it's kind of like how I stated with Boston, like with the Boston Red Sox, where they're coming off of a horrible season, and they're like, well, you know what? Let's raise ticket prices because, after all, fielding a baseball team is expensive.
Ridiculous.
Although obviously in this case it's completely different because with Winnipeg. I mean, you take a look at them, they're on top of their division right now. So,
yeah,
you know, they're in a prime playoff spot. One of the things that I brought up is that maybe perhaps it's ticket prices that, you know, you're not going to see fans, especially considering that more Canadian teams are kind of bunched closer together as opposed to in the States. That maybe perhaps fans are going, well, I could pay this much money to go to a Winnipeg Jets game, but I could pay this much money, maybe perhaps it's cheaper to go to like a Vancouver Canucks game.
Heck, and even furthermore, I mean, hockey is such a religious hotbed and people just they just worship the sport, which is awesome. everyone and their grandmother and their sister and their aunt, everyone watches hockey in Canada. I think it's awesome. So, hey, a step further, Steve, they have a lot of fun going to minor league hockey games too, or high school games there. So it's like they don't have to shell out hard-earned money to go. They don't have to stay married to the and loyal to the Winnipeg Jets at the end of the day. And so, you know, you'll always have the diehards, the guys with the jerseys on, that'll go to 30 games a year and drink beer and yell and, you know, have to get paint on. You're not going to lose that legion. But a lot of the people who are kind of like on the fence, like the lukewarm fans who are interested, they're like you said, they're not going to commit because of the really jacked up ticket prices. They're turning people off then. So I think it's kind of that combination of things. You know, if you're doing really well, at least keep the ticket prices reasonable. To get those fans attracted again and to really fill the stadium. You know, don't try to pull a fast one over on the blue-collar fans that want to take, you know, their two sons or their two daughters to the game to experience NHL hockey, you know? It happens too often in sports all over.
Yeah, like I said, it could be a number of things. It could be ticket prices. It could be, concession prices. Maybe the state of the actual arena itself. That could come into play. Like nobody's gonna wanna pay high prices to sit in shit seats. You know what I mean? So
no.
It could be a number of things.
Now, was their attendance really down recently, guys? I admit I don't know where they like struggling. Was their attendance just this poor the last couple of years? Is that what's kind of surprising right now? Yeah. So there you go. So. They thought right away since they probably are suddenly really good, oh, yeah, we can just double ticket prices. And the fans are like, nope, we're not ready to come back quite yet. you can't do that. The fans aren't that stupid. Like, they know what's in their bank account, and they know that if you're really jacking up prices, you know, unless you're like, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs or, you know, the Yankees in their heyday, you know, smaller market teams, really, you can't try to pull the wool over these fans' eyes. You can't jack up ticket prices and not see it. When you jack up ticket prices a lot, you're going to see the drop in attendance.
Right. And if we're taking a look, because I mean they did just beat the Carolina Hurricanes tonight. Right now, through 59 games, they're 38-16-5, which is good for 81 points. Wow. Like I said earlier, too, they just signed Connor Hellebuck and Mark Scheifele to 8-year deals with massive they were basically identical contracts. I forget the exact average annual value, but they signed 8-year deals to both of these players. So obviously, they're gonna have to recover the that money somehow. And
yeah.
The way to do that would be obviously – now, I don't know if this is the actual thing that happened, but the way to do that would be to raise the ticket prices.
Yeah, it's the easiest way.
Yeah.
It's tough because, like you said, Steve, if they're really kind of bleeding money, right, if they shell out all that money, you just nailed it on the head, man. Like, easiest, quickest way to get that money back, jack up the prices. But the fans aren't going to love that. So it's kind of a catch-22. I would maybe raise them a little bit, but it sounds to me like you guys are painting the picture like they really, really are kind of screwing the fans over. So I guess they've been jacked up a lot. Because
mm-hmm.
if it's a winning team, the fans should show up. So it seems like it's pretty unfair. I mean, I would have, if I were them, what do I know? You know, I'm just another bozo on the bus. But if I were running a franchise like the Jets, I'd keep the prices the same. And then, you know, and then come playoff time, okay, now it's time to really start paying the big bucks. Get in the arena. So.
Right. And another thing too is you got the trade deadline coming up too. So there's a possibility you're going to see even more prices. Well, obviously they won't, you know, they won't do it during the season.
Yeah, of course not.
But yeah, they wouldn't do it during the season, but you know, all of a sudden, here we go. You know, you could see next year, maybe depending on what they may add at the deadline here, you may see them raise prices even higher, depending on because especially when you consider what the what the salary cap is every single year, and whether it gets raised or lowered. Most of the time, I mean, let's be fair, most of the time it gets raised. But, you know, depending on what that salary cap is, that could ultimately determine what they're going to be asking people for, essentially.
Yeah, it's a tough spot for them to be in because they shell out a ton of money. So, you know, as usual, the fans are kind of caught in the middle.
Right. But speaking of the NHL trade deadline, we do have yet another trade to cover here. One of the big names off of the deadline market has officially been moved. The Dallas Stars, they in their bid for a playoff run, they have acquired defenseman Chris Tanev from the Calgary Flames, along with goaltender Cole Brady from the New Jersey Devils. The Stars, in return, will send defensive prospect Artyom Grushnikov along with a 2024 second-round pick and a conditional 2026 third-round pick back to Calgary. Dallas, meanwhile, has also sent a 2026 fourth-round pick to the New Jersey Devils for their part in retaining 50% of Tanev's salary for the remainder of the season. So now, as the Flames also retained 50% of his contract, that now brings down his average annual value to just $1.125 million for the Stars. And as far as the conditions on the conditional third-round pick headed to Calgary, the Flames will only receive this pick if Dallas makes it to the Stanley Cup Final this year. Now, you know, this is actually kind of interesting because we've been starting to see this even more. Teams get creative with the salary cap, especially at the trade deadline years every single year, where they may send a player to a certain team first, only for that team, you know, for that team to then cover 50% of the contract that's being sent over to them, to then send over to the team that they're supposed to be going to. Like, for example, here, let's say Chris Tanev's salary cap or salary hit is worth about $4 million. So Calgary, they retain 50% of that cap hit, so about $2 million will be on the books for Calgary. He gets sent to the New Jersey Devils. The New Jersey Devils then retain half of that $2 million cap hit, which would then be reduced down to $1 million. So they would have to pay $1 million of that remaining contract, and thus the team that he ultimately ended up with, the Dallas Stars, would only be on the hook for $1 million of his remaining cap. I mean, it's amazing how teams have been so willing to, you know, to take on, to help other teams and take on cap hit if it means that they're going to get reimbursed for their help. Like if they're going to, if they'll end up getting like a fourth round pick, like the New Jersey Devils ended up getting here to help in retaining salary. But this, you know, this move, this is actually a pretty good move for the Dallas Stars because they, you know, for this is probably one of their best spots that they've been in recent years, especially under the core of Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn. So now Dallas, they basically bolster up their defense in the pursuit of a Stanley Cup. And
yes.
Honestly, you know, Chris Tanev, I mean, 33, 34 years old, he still has quite a bit of time left to go. And also, I believe he does have a little bit of playoff experience. Because if I recall correctly, I believe he was on the Stanley Cup final team for the Vancouver Canucks that ended up losing to the Boston Bruins.
You mean 2011? Yeah.
Yeah, in 2011. So, you know, they actually do have they're bringing in a guy here with actual playoff experience, with somebody who's actually been to that Cup final. So, I mean, let's start with you, Lou. What do you think about the Dallas Stars acquiring Chris Tanev?
If they're going to make a run for the playoffs, this is, I think, their best chance. You know, they're kind of like borderline right now. And, you know, like I said, trades can either make a team or break a team. And, you know, with his Stanley Cup resume, I think maybe this is what Dallas might need to get back in the playoff mix. You know, it might be a little bit tricky depending on where the season, but if they're going to make it, they're going to have to do it right now.
Right. I mean, he's easily an upgrade over Yanni Hakanpää on
yes.
the top four for the defense. I mean, obviously he's not gonna overtake Miro Heiskanen on the right side, but he's definitely an upgrade over Hakanpää. So
right.
It's definitely a big move, I feel, for the Dallas Stars to bolster their defensive core. What are your thoughts, Alex, on this move?
Yeah, I echo your guys' sentiments. I mean, it gives a vote of confidence to the fans and obviously the guys in the locker room and on the bench and on the ice. You know, if you add someone like that, a proven, accomplished veteran, it shows everyone, hey, we're going all in. You know, the players are excited. The next day at practice, they're pumped up. You know, it gives them a lot of energy. A good trade like that, man, really means a lot to the players in the locker room already. So, yeah, and if you can add, like you said, if you can add a top four defenseman, it's a no-brainer. 33 or 34. I mean, you know, like hockey's unique. You're not going to – there's no Tom Brady's anymore in football, right? The 40s, the 45-year-old. But hockey,
yeah.
You can go – you know, obviously you can go late 30s. And he's been relatively healthy. So, yeah,
almost
he might 50, have four or five or six
yardage.
Good years left. Yeah, I mean, he's not near the end of the road. So it's a really good trade overall. It's a good acquisition.
Definitely, Diane. What are your thoughts on not just your New Jersey Devils actually benefiting from this trade, being helping out with salary, but also with the Dallas Stars bolstering their defense?
We lost her.
Did we lose that? I think we might have lost Diane.
All good. She can
call back. It says she's still connected, though. So maybe
right.
She might have just stepped away from the phone. But speaking of the Calgary Flames, we do have a little bit of breaking news here. The Florida Panthers are making a push to acquire a Calgary Flames defenseman, Noah Hanifin, according to ESPN's Kevin Weeks. It's important to note, though, that the Panthers do not have a first-round pick in either this year's or next year's draft. So with a first-round pick reportedly being the price for Noah Hanifin, Florida, it looks like they are potentially reaching more into the future to try and make a push to get back to the Stanley Cup final. As they currently sit in first place in the Atlantic Division, and actually, I believe, first place overall in the NHL, to try and get back to the Stanley Cup final. And I'll tell you one thing, Noah Hanifin, granted he's a free agent at the end of the year, but by the way, from what it sounds like he does not want to play for a Canadian team. He wants to go back to the States. I know the Boston Bruins, as well as the Tampa Bay Lightning, are in the market as well for Hanifin. But 27 years old, this is a kid who is right now at the top of his career. 11 goals, 23 assists as a defenseman so far this season.
Impressive.
I mean, he's gonna fetch a pretty hefty price. For the Calgary Flames, whatever a team has to give up for him.
I'm thinking about that, guys. I mean, that's like Justin Fields, 23 or 24-year-old quarterback in the NFL. Like, if someone's available that's 27, a.k.a., you know, that's really in the prime of their career. 11 goals as a defenseman, you know, he can obviously be a threat from the blue line. I mean, yeah, he's going to be in top demand. I think, like, maybe two number one picks. I mean, that sounds like – that's, like, the ideal free agent acquisition if you're a hockey team. Well, I mean
– I wouldn't say two number one picks. I would say like, a first and maybe a third or a fourth.
Okay, I temper my enthusiasm there. No, you're right. That's a little bit nuts. That's more like for, like, a Brian Leetch, but – if this guy continues progression, I mean, at 27 years old, you got to figure he's probably going to be better the next two or three years, too. The defensemen are more like, that's where awareness and, you know, defensively, like, being a two-way player. I don't know, I've seen, you know, from Paul Coffey to Ray Bourque to Brian Leetch, I've seen those guys really play their best hockey in their early 30s. So if you lock that guy into a contract, you could have a good player for the next 7 or 8 years. So if he's available, I'm looking to give up maybe a little bit more than I usually would.
Yeah, I mean, right now he's basically putting up Erik Karlsson type numbers. And you know, Erik Karlsson, he's the type of defenseman who put up like 20 goals in a season. And you don't see that from defensemen. So I think the big thing to look at here is if you're Hanifin, or if you're a team that gets Hanifin, I would want an assurance that he's going to re-sign before I give up that much to take him on. I mean, he's already set a career high in goals with 11 goals this year, and as far as let me see, where is he at in assists? Let me check one more time. Noah Hanifin.
And real quick, don't get me wrong. I wasn't comparing his skill set
right, or
Coffey, but I was saying just watching through the years with hockey like you guys have, I've known that defensemen can play really well later in their careers. So, I mean, he could play. Hmm. He could keep getting better for the next 7 or 8 years. That's what I was trying to say.
Right.
I'm not comparing. He's not going to be Brian Leetch. No one's going to be another Ray Bourque, but he can play at a high level for 8 or 9 years. So you could add him for the next decade if he keeps playing well.
Yeah.
That's a huge trade.
He's about,
you know, if you can lock him up,
he's about
to make the trade. You have to get him to agree to an extension before you make that deal.
Right. And he's about I'm actually looking at his stat line right now. He's about 14 points away from tying his career high in points for a season with 48. He currently has 34, 11 goals, 23 assists. Like I said, 11 goals, that's his new career high for a single season as a defenseman. A left-shot defenseman. Yeah, I mean, this is probably, apart from Christopher Tanev and Jacob Markstrom, this is probably Calgary's number one asset that they have to trade right now.
Oh.
And Noah Hanifin, one of the defensemen of the Calgary Flames. They've already moved one defenseman in Christopher Tanev the last couple of days. And from what it sounds like, that the Florida Panthers are currently in hot pursuit of Noah Hanifin.
Real quick, guys, that Rempe, the 6'7" rookie for the Rangers, the goon, he's fighting the former Ranger Ryan Reeves, Toronto, New York Rangers, 3-2. Toronto's leading. But yeah, it's pretty cool. The ex-Ranger Reeves versus the new rookie goon versus the ex-Ranger. Reeves just annihilated him in a fight. They both have blood on them. Massive brawl.
You know what's
7 minutes?
You know what's funny actually?
Reeves,
you know what's funny actually? The Toronto Maple Leafs are actually better without Ryan Reeves on the ice.
Oh yeah.
He's actually proven to be a cancer for them this year in certain games.
I liked him a lot for the Rangers. I know he has mixed reviews, but, I mean, I always like a guy who will throw down and protect the star players and get bloody for the team. I mean, they both get a 5-minute. It's null and void. It's canceled out. I think it's more of just for – it's a lot of it's entertainment, I think, when guys throw down in hockey and start brawling. But yeah,
right. Well, it's worth noting too. It's worth noting though too that was when he was a couple years younger. You know, he was 33 at that time. You know, now he's 36, 37 this year. You know, he's always been, you know, a bottom line type of player. He's never really been, you've never really seen him on the second line. You've seen him more on like the third or fourth line for the most part. Actually, you know, period, he's been on the fourth line.
He's been an enforcer.
Yeah, he's an enforcer basically.
But I mean,
so,
pretty cool. He just took that rookie to the woodshed, the Rangers rookie that's in the headlines, the New York Post, the New York Times, everyone's talking about that guy. And he hit him like 15 times in the head. It was like a 2-minute fight. You'll see the replays of it.
He's not a tight dog. That's what he is. He's trouble. He's not good for the team. But he's got to do something about his temper. You know, because this is how he might lose games, because this guy is a total schmuck. I mean, he's taking fights for apparently no reason at all. One person that closes his pants within 5 seconds, and boom, he's ready to whack the guy. I mean, this guy's got a temper.
Right. It kind of cancels it out, the matching penalties, but this is pretty rare. It's 6 minutes left in the third period, and it's a 3-2 Leafs winning right now. It's rare to see fight near, like, you know, 3-2 game. Usually it's, like, early on. It's not near the end of a close game.
So I have found the asking price. The asking price for Noah Hanifin is reportedly a first-round pick, a top prospect, and a current roster player.
Yeah, pretty lofty.
That is the asking price.
How much is it?
I mean, if you're asking – especially for a top line defenseman, you know, your number one left shot, you're asking for a first round pick, a top prospect, and a roster player. Like, for example, for the Boston Bruins, they would have to give up a first round pick. They'd have to give up Mason Lowry, and they would have to give up another roster player. in order just to get Noah Hanifin. That right there is an extremely steep price, especially for a team that's looking to make a run at the playoffs or a run at the Stanley Cup.
They're going to intentionally have a few agents and GMs tell them that, and then they'll eventually calm down and lower their expectations. But, yeah, they're asking for the world right now. You're right. That's too much. But, I mean, so they're going to eventually, if they do want to move them, they're going to have to settle for less than that. No one's going to balk them.
But teams, this is actually where here's the thing, though. The closer you get to the trade deadline, this is where it actually plays right into the hands of the team that's looking to make a trade.
Yeah.
So Calgary could wait and hang on to him all the way up until the deadline if they wanted to. They could wait up until the deadline, and that would basically force a team like Florida or a team like Boston to actually cave in, because – you know, it's basically up to Calgary whether or not they want to trade him.
Exactly. No, you nailed it, Steve, and you just wait, and then you wait for the highest bidder, and that's where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they don't have to lower their asking price. I mean, it's not like this is free agency where teams can move on elsewhere to other players. I mean, they can, but there's only a certain amount of time. You know, teams have to make a decision quickly on what they're going to do, if they're going to pursue this player, or if they're going to stay pursuing this player for the duration of their of the deadline.
Yeah, they hold the card.
So,
I mean, like, they're not desperately. They can just hold on to them. It's not like it's a fire sale where they're just trying to give people away. They hold all the power. It's a matter of who's going
right
to offer the most.
And by the way, I was talking about the Devils earlier and Jacob Markstrom. The Devils are now circling back to Jacob Markstrom. And apparently they are now willing to take on Markstrom's full salary cap hit of three. They'd be willing to take Markstrom's full cap hit of $6 million. Now, originally, for New Jersey to have done this, they probably would have included Vitek Vanacek in a deal in any deal for Jacob Markstrom. But now it sounds like the Flames do not want to take salary back in any deal involving Jacob Markstrom. So, however, though, the Devils have officially circled back towards trying to acquire him now with UC Saros likely off of the table from the Nashville Predators. So that's a name to keep an eye on for Devils fans as we approach Thursday's deadline is Jacob Markstrom from the Calgary Flames. That could be especially for a team that's looking to get back into the playoffs after being eliminated last year in New Jersey. And we know that they are no stranger to attempting big moves. I mean, we saw them get Timo Meier last year from the San Jose Sharks. this is definitely a potential deal worth watching if I'm a New Jersey Devils fan. Now over to Vancouver, there was trade talks between the Vancouver Canucks and the Carolina Hurricanes surrounding star centerman Elias Pettersson. However, Vancouver Canucks have officially agreed to an 8-year contract extension with Elias Pettersson, which It breaks down as this. Basically, it'll be an average annual value of $11.6 million, and the deal is worth $92.8 million in total for the Vancouver Canucks. And also, it also carries a full no-movement clause once he's eligible for the 2025-2026 season. And the full breakdown for the 25-year-old here is as follows. Next year, his cap hit will be $2.5 million. Then in 2025-2026, it'll rise up to $4.5 million. 2026-2027, it'll go up to $11 million. And then it'll fall back down again. 27-28, it'll be 9.45. 28-29, it'll be 7.25 mil. And then it'll drop even further as he ages on. The 29-30 season, it'll be worth 3.7 mil until his contract is up in 2032. And also, not to mention, he got a signing bonus worth about $47 million of that $92.8 million. So it's a pretty hefty payday for the Vancouver Canucks and Elias Pettersson as they lock up their number one center for the long-term future. And you see, that kind of brings me back to the Winnipeg Jets, what we were talking about earlier, when it comes to them having problems, with drawing crowds. You take a look at what the Vancouver Canucks are doing. They're building a young team, a young competitive team, and now they're making sure to lock up members of that team for the long-term future. And Elias Pettersson is the first of those players.
How you do it?
So, I mean, let's start with you on that, Alex. What are your thoughts on Vancouver officially locking up Elias Pettersson? Now, granted, it's at a steep price, but, 25 years old, he'll be 33 going on 34 at the end of that contract.
Yeah, I mean, you got to pay the piper when it comes to top young talent, right? And then he's part of the renaissance, part of their coming back to life and really doing great. So he's a pivotal, he's a really important member. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, you don't want to try to lowball the guy and try to sneak one on him and say, oh, you're going to take this amount instead. And then he gets upset. And his agent is furious because agents are all about money. And then think about that, the ripple effect, the rest of the locker room, the young guys, they're doing well. Oh, they're going to be cheap with us. So, it's, you know what I mean? A lot of these players, they see what the other players are getting offered. So you want to make these guys happy, mm-hmm. especially the young, talented guys on your team.
What are your thoughts, Lou? What are your thoughts on the Canucks? The surging Vancouver Canucks locking up 25-year-old Elias Pettersson pretty much the majority of his career.
Yeah, look what they've done so far. I mean, this is going to put him over the edge right now. I mean, and with the talent like what he has, it's going to make him more of a dangerous threat going into the remainder of the regular season and into a long stretch from the postseason.
Yeah.
Like I said a few weeks ago, with the way the standings are right now between the Rangers and the Canucks, can we see a 94 rematch? I think with this acquisition that the Canucks made, they're going to make a strong case hanging down the stretch, and I think it's going to push them, deep in the playoff runs. So this can get very interesting for the Great Northwest.
Oh, God. Lou, on that note, Rangers pull the goalie. Rangers score, minute left. 3-3
yes.
game in Toronto. 3-3
yeah.
Toronto Rangers.
Yeah. The strategy backfired. Ah.
Well,
usually they help the offensive team, but the defense came through this time.
That's a sight that I like to see. Toronto squandering a lead. The opposite could be said for my Boston Bruins tonight. I don't know. They randomly decided not to show up tonight, apparently.
I was picking up pizza before, like right before your show, and I looked up, and they had the Islanders hosting Boston 4-0. I'm like, what is going on here?
that I was seeing something.
It
yeah.
is even an offset, you know. It's, no matter how good you are, you're not going to go undefeated the whole year, you know.
You're going to drop
No,
a
but it, it. I mean, the first three goals they allowed were all to the first three goals were all to Kyle Palmieri for a natural hat trick. I mean, they gave up five straight goals to the Islanders before Mark McLaughlin, who they literally just called up from Providence, scores his first goal of the season. And it's just kind of laughable. It's kind of like we're looking up and we're like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
It's one of those random nights. And hey, I mean, the Islanders are at home and their backs are against the wall. I mean, there's a lot of talk in the New York media right now that Patrick Roy, you know, the coach might be fired. So they're rallying. I mean, they're kind of desperate.
Anyone think of that?
Boston caught them on a bad night.
Yeah, well, you know, another thing, too, is it just seemed like there's no urgency out of Boston tonight. Like, they're more than willing to deal with this. They're more than willing to give up this loss, basically.
It means a lot more to the Islanders than it does to Boston, and not just because the Islanders are at home. I mean, they dropped the close one to the Rangers on national TV. Their head coach is about to get fired. So, yeah, they're playing for a lot. And Boston, like you said, it's just another game for Boston. I don't think they're going to really lose any sleep over this loss.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just,
no, wait a second.
To me, it's almost like if I'm a Boston fan, I'm looking at this game and I'm like, why are we even bothering, you know, competing for the playoffs this year? Because we're barely doing anything.
They're sputtering.
I mean, We've had way too many of these type of games where we give up like goals, and it's like, how do you expect to contend when you can't even, you know, you can't even put together a string of wins.
That's true. You want to see consistency. You know, obviously the season's not over, but it's not encouraging when, like you said, giving up five goals, it's not a good look.
No.
Not a good
look. Oh, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
go
ahead, Lou.
We have a milestone moment here.
Well,
actually,
LeBron.
Have an album,
oh, we
guys.
Do?
Yes. Steve, guys. Alex got it.
Sorry.
Points for LeBron James.
There you go. Yeah, I'm not even watching it, Lou. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yeah, LeBron just eclipsed the record.
Yep. Well, he has the record, but nobody's ever got 40,000 points before.
Sorry, yeah, there you go. Yeah. I'm watching the Rangers right now.
Hey, wait, I got an idea for a show. How about the $40,000 pyramid? No, okay.
Hey, maybe. Who knows?
Huh.
Shoot me.
Wow. 40,000. I mean, just think about it. All the players that have played the game of basketball, and no one has been able to hit 40,000 until now.
I mean, you can love him or hate him. He's very polarizing. A lot of people aren't like middle. People either love him or they love to boo him. But I mean, you have to respect the guy. Absolutely legendary, and still playing at a really elite level in pushing 40 years old.
Tell me what you're saying about that.
It's amazing.
You know, there's a lot of people think that, you know, of course, some will say Kareem was the best, you know, because he scored the most points up until last year. Some will say Jordan, especially for his playoff performances and whatnot. So, you know, I wonder what they're saying. I wonder what fans are thinking now of who might be the greatest player of all time, even though he's won six championships in 8 years and whatnot. So, you know, I guess it brings up the old debate again. It does,
and I respect the Kobe crowd. And hey, I have my whole body respects Kobe, but even since I was growing up to right now in the present age, I mean, LeBron and Jordan to me. Jordan first, not to sidetrack Steve, but yeah, I mean, LeBron's right there. I mean, I really do think it is Jordan and LeBron, to me at least.
Yeah, especially with our generation. Now it's up on the sports page. You got it. Now it's official.
I mean, think about it, guys. He's not suiting up like, you know, struggling defensively, yelling, like, you know, putting up 15 points a night just to get a record. He can still put up 50 points in a night.
Yeah,
and the guy,
right.
And he rebounds. The guy's one of the biggest guys on the court, too. He's not just a guard. So, I mean, he really is remarkable.
Yeah, he really is. When you look at especially his age right now, and the fact that he's still putting up these type of, you know, he's able to put up these type of numbers.
Yeah,
he can still dominate at his age.
He can dominate, like, not at the flip of a switch, but he does, like, sometimes, like, a night like tonight. I think the over-under, if you're, like, on DraftKings or FanDuel, it was, like, plus 30 points, and the guy's going to crush that. I mean, he can put up 50 points on any night. He's definitely not just kind of still playing to still play. He's still one of the top, I don't know, handful of players in the world, and he's almost 40. It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, I think it partly helps too the fact that you know, players are actually feeding him the ball as opposed to, you know, he's obviously one of the top two options on that Lakers roster, him and Anthony Davis. You know, you don't see them having other options, other reliable options to go to. So I think that's kind of helping him the last couple of seasons that he's
Absolutely.
Been with LA.
That's a great observation, and yeah. loving what you just said to build on that point. Like you said, remember guys, a lot of his career, he was, even though he's 6'9 and 260, he's Karl Malone size. He's a lot bigger than Charles Barkley. There's no guy that handles the ball like him, like his size, ever in the history of the sport. So a lot of these years, you know, Cleveland and Miami, he was basically the point guard, even though he's one of the biggest guys in the world. And now,
right,
like you said, Steve, now he's playing more closer to the rim. He's not carrying the load of the offense, which is helping him still put up huge numbers, I think. It's going to give him another – I'm telling you what, I think he'll play another 3 or 4 years, which is crazy. That's like Tom Brady's territory again in the NBA. That's unheard of.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely know, you know, he wants to play for as long as his son, you know, gets to the NBA. He wants to be able to play alongside his son. That much I remember.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, we're going to probably see him for quite a bit moving on down the line here. Now, at the same time, you know, it just makes you wonder how much longer, especially with the more he ages, how much longer can he keep up this this way of producing?
Well, I think Steve, he is rare. Like, I'm sure there are guys that are amazing NFL players, right? Or MLB.
When you reach, you know, mid-30s and your late 30s and your 40s, you start to
baseball
taper off.
Isn't as grueling. Baseball isn't as grueling. So I love baseball like you and guys. But as far as these really physically violent, really aggressive sports, I mean, he's only – LeBron, it's like LeBron and Brady when you think about it. We've seen other guys that play when they're 41 or 42 and they – probably sucked because Father Time is undefeated.
Well, yeah.
So it's like LeBron's one of a kind. I mean, I don't think you'll see Anthony Edwards or, you know, you can name 10 really good NBA players right now that are younger. It's very rare if you got it's almost obsolete. It's so rare it never happens. You have a guy like LeBron, and again, he's still playing like he's 23 years old. Not as consistently, but he still has that. He can still score 50 or 60 in a night. It's really incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
He could spend 3 or 4
years.
Thing,
you know, you can have a play. You can have those certain times where you know, you can still turn back the clock like that. But at the same time, it's almost like as your career starts to, you know, we can see that in certain cases, as your career starts to wind down, sometimes that drop off is drastic.
It's quick.
No,
it happens
I'm not
overnight.
Saying,
yeah.
Yeah,
it
now,
can happen
I'm, not, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen with LeBron, but you know, it has happened before where, you know, there's one season a player is on top of their game, and then next thing you know, it's like they've completely washed out. Like you could look at Dwight Howard, for example.
Look at Klay Thompson. Dwight Howard. Look at Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is, you know, 60% as good as he used to be. I know there's some injuries, but yeah, Dwight Howard, you nailed it there. Yeah, there's guys. I mean, look at Ovechkin in hockey. What does he have? Seven? I've read an article. It's like 6 or 7 goals this year. Like real quick, it can just kind of stop where the wheel stops turning and like, wow, my legs are done. Like these guys are playing and working so hard and playing at such a high level. Suddenly, it's not gradual. Suddenly, like they just stop. Look at some of the great cornerbacks or defenders in the NFL. When a guy gets slow and has a bad year, oftentimes they retire the next year. You know what I mean? A lot of times, like you said, you don't really see it coming. It just happens overnight. But
yeah.
LeBron, it's just LeBron. It's like he can just basically determine however long he wants to play. He's just not slowing down.
No, and you know, I wouldn't really expect him to. Especially if you're an athlete that takes real good care of your body, like you know, like LeBron, like Kobe did. If you're a player that takes real good care of your body,
yes,
you should be able to have a more lengthier career, so to speak.
Absolutely. And again, I mean, look at Brady. The guy's just like his body is not to sound corny. It's like a temple. The guy will not like wouldn't eat a cheeseburger if you paid him. Like certain athletes, like Brady, LeBron, they're like robots as far as every day they watch exactly what they're eating, exactly how much they sleep, exactly what time they go to bed. I'm like, I'm jealous. But they're programmed to just dominate and be healthy forever. It's really amazing. LeBron's like the only other guy like Brady that I could think of, and vice versa. They're kind of two like in that just in a class by themselves where they could literally play as long. Brady could shoot up next year and lead a team to the playoffs. LeBron in 3 years could still be an all-star.
Yeah,
you're right about that. It's definitely you know, especially in the case of LeBron, he's one of those guys that's probably just going to continue to really play at such a high level that he's been playing at.
Not to steer just on Bron, but I mean on a historic night, just real quick. I mean, I'll give you guys a question. Do you think would he go to like? I don't know if he doesn't need any more media hype, but I mean, the Knicks are like on the rise, or even the Celtics. Do you think LeBron's going to play for another team before he retires?
No. LA is his home. He wants to stay there. Especially now his son in college.
I think he's got two or three more years.
I wouldn't rule it out, honestly. Him potentially playing elsewhere. And the reason why I say that is because you look at where his son may potentially play.
That's the thing, Lou. I know, Lou, you're saying late, which I respect. I think he might go where, kind of like Steve said, where his son, he wants to play with his son.
You don't think he's going to stay in California? I mean, now I'm talking to his son right now. You don't think he's going to stay in California?
The thing is, I don't think
it all depends on where his son. It all depends on where his son gets drafted to.
Okay,
and his son's not even playing well in college. Like he's not. I don't think he's even a pro. I think someone's going to draft him
right.
just to try to get his dad. Someone's going to draft him. which is ridiculous. But
another one to give up to his father.
Mm. It's like the Greek Freak has five brothers on the bench in Milwaukee. Like, it's part of the contract.
Right,
my family
right.
here.
And this officially in the New York Islanders with a 5-1 victory over the Boston Bruins in regulation. So the
Ooh.
Islanders get a very important 2 points for head coach Patrick Waugh.
Congratulations, Patrick. You're dirty, no good.
Hey, it happened, Steve. I mean, it meant a lot more to the Islanders, you know, tonight. So they got a win for their beleaguered coach on the hot seat.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I kind of don't get, though, is the Bruins, especially knowing that they're trying to that they may be trying to trade Linus Ullmark, they kept Ullmark in for all five goals instead of switching over to Swayman.
If you trade Ullmark, the Islanders are done.
Huh?
Rangers
if you trade Ullmark, you're done.
I don't know if the Bruins are done, but...
No, the Islanders trade Ullmark.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, you got to take a look at where Ullmark is in his career right now. You know, he's I believe going to be 30 years old. So
not exactly
here's the problem though, is that if the Bruins try to trade him at this deadline, They're doing it mainly to try and free up salary so that they can go after a player or two, and just based off of their injury problems recently, they really need the help, in particular on the defensive line. So that's why, you know, you're seeing the Bruins try to start attacking the defensive trade market, because they've suffered, you know, they've gotten they've suffered injuries to Hampus Lindholm, who has been out week to week. They've suffered injuries to Matt Grzelcyk. This one isn't defensive related, but they did lose one of their centers, Pavel Zacha, for the rest of the game tonight due to an undisclosed injury. He was out after the first period. So, you know, there's definitely there's a lot of injury woes plaguing the Boston Bruins organization right now.
Uh-huh.
So it's definitely something that they're gonna have to really take care of, especially at the trade deadline. You know, if you really, really want to, if you're really looking at potentially being a Stanley Cup contender.
Yes.
And, I mean, I'm just being honest here right now. Just now, granted, this was one loss, but I'm just looking at the way this team has been over the past couple of weeks. I mean, we literally went to, I think it was 6 straight overtimes before we ended up losing tonight. We've had 6 straight games where we've either won or lost in overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a team that for some reason just cannot hang on to a lead. I don't know why. I don't know if it has to do with the defense, if our goaltending is starting is really starting to act up. I don't know what it is, but this team just cannot hold on to a lead, period.
What are the 3 rules about losing a hockey game? Simple. It's always the defense. It's always the defense. It's always the defense. There you go.
But regardless, you know, something has to happen in order for if Boston really wants to be dead set on competing this year. Something's going to have to happen at the deadline. But here's another problem. You take a look at what Boston did last year, how they went all in for the final seasons of David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron.
Oh yeah.
They don't have any actual assets to deal without dipping into this this active roster.
Yeah, we talked about that at length for the last 12 months. We've had some great shows talking about that, guys. And yeah, they kind of emptied the bullets, so to speak, emptied the cartridge, whatever you want to say. They went all in already, so now their cupboards are kind of bare. They don't have a lot of resources to suddenly do it again and go all in again. It's like a rebuild on the fly. That's what I think it is. And they're doing
right
this year, but it's like they don't have those draft picks. They don't draft picks, and young players don't grow on trees, so they have to kind of let it grow for a little bit.
Right. So, you know, it's a complicated complicated picture, so to speak.
Yeah, because they had a nice influx. They had some great players step up from the minors, which, you know, as a hardcore Bruins fan, Steve, you were rightfully concerned because they had some big, you know, shoes to fill. But now it's like, oh, are we actually good again? Yeah, we are. Wow, this is great. Like, we don't miss those guys. And then, oh, wow, we're losing 5-1 to the Islanders. Okay, what's going on? So it's like they're kind of, I don't want to say stuck in the middle, but it's going to be tougher for them to go all in again and re-up and reload. Now, they already reloaded last year. They're kind of like, their tank's kind of, they are who they're going to be for the next unless they trade someone else. But, I mean, they don't have the resources like they had last year, obviously, to make those deals.
Right. Well, I mean, we could basically put it like this. This team right now is basically the team, especially when you look at what they look like on paper, this is the team that we were expecting to see all season long. You know,
yes,
a team that may just barely make the playoffs.
Looks like the Eagles.
That's
the big, bad
what they've
Eagles
been playing like.
It reminds me of the Eagles, where they were all, you know, rightfully they had an awesome run, and then, they still have a lot of talent, and then it's like come crashing back down to earth the next season. You know, after the run last year, I know the Boston Bruins got eliminated in the first round, but both really talented rosters in their respective sports, and then, you know, didn't get the job done last year, and then, oh, we have plenty of guys back, and then they started strong, and now it's like we're getting our ass kicked in games like this to the Islanders. You know, Eagles losing to the Bucks, Eagles losing to the Seahawks. It's like, who are we? Maybe we're not who we thought we were going to be this year. You know, they're kind of living on last year. Steve, as a Bruins fan, do you think they can get in and make a run again, or do you think this is kind of a let's plan for next year?
I will be flat out honest here, and you know, normally it's odd to be a Bruins fan or to be a fan of any team and say this about your own team. The way that this team is built, I don't see a realistic run at the Stanley Cup. I think their opportunity was last year. They failed, and now it's basically downhill. And the reason why I say that is they're so strapped against the cap that they're lucky to have signed certain players for cheap this offseason. Like, for example, they signed Danton Heinen to a professional tryout agreement, and he ended up. It took a few weeks into the regular season before he officially signed. And when he did, you know, since he signed, he's gotten double digits in goals. You know, this isn't the type of of a signing that a playoff contender makes. You know, this is a type of signing that a strapped for cash team makes that you're hoping, well, maybe hopefully we can get some sort of production out of them. And it's kind of the same thing with James Van Riemsdyk. You know, they signed James Van Riemsdyk to the veteran minimum this offseason. And, I mean, let's be honest here. He's worth at least $2 million per season. So the fact that they're so cash-strapped, you know, they've been having to basically have him and hope that he's good enough that he'll end up scoring big for them on the cheap, so to speak.
Yeah,
and that's what he's ended up doing.
Yeah, I love what you said. It's like you have to take more risks because the year after, like, a big letdown, and then when you have guys retiring, your GM, your ownership's like, okay, let's get back there. So then you're making kind of moves. It's like that's a low risk. Like, you know what I mean? That's a very minimum salary. It's not typical of them. It's like the year after is tough because they went, they did go all in. Now it's like, oh man. How do we get back there? Like, sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years maybe to get to the big dance again. It's tough to get right back there, especially when big guys, you know, retire or move on.
And also it doesn't help either that you take a look at, you ask, like, okay, what do we have going on in our minors, you know, in our development system? Do we have anything ready in the minors? And you take a look, and it's basically like, well, you know, we have Johnny Beecher, who's supposed to be on the major league roster. He started off the season on the major league roster. You would think he would stay on the major league roster with how well he's performed. Nah, let's send him down to Providence and let's call up somebody else. You have a prospect in Mason Lowry, who they've been calling up back and forth. They've been sending him up, or they've been bringing him up and sending him down, bringing him up. Honestly, he should have made the major league roster out of training camp, out of the preseason.
Sounds like it. Yeah, they're rushing stuff. They're anxious. They want to make sure their fans are happy. They want to show, oh, you know what, we're going to get back there. Okay, so they're panicking. Like you just said, maybe they're not giving guys enough time to develop. We want to get right back to the playoffs and win this thing and show that we're not losers. Obviously, the Bruins will never be losers. You get my point. They want to go right back to where they were. Look at the Eagles. They were kind of cutting corners. They made a trade for that safety Byard from the Titans. The guy was totally shot. Mike Vrabel stole a couple draft picks for him. The year after you have a total letdown in the playoffs, like the Bruins did, they're being a little bit quick and like urgent and like anxious and nervous. Like, oh, let's try to do this. Then a month later, it's not working. Let's do that. You know what I mean? It's like they're rushing through different decisions and not letting things develop organically.
Well,
you know, you should never you should never have guys going up and down, you know, to the minors. That's never a good sign. When they're ready,
unless it's injury related. Unless it's injury related where you need to call somebody up as a replacement. But, case, you know, I'll take Mason Lowry again for an example. Mason Lowry has scored, as a rookie, 4 goals on the defensive line. Now, normally, if a player like Mason Lowry is producing, regardless if he's a rookie or not, wouldn't you think you would keep him up on the main roster?
100%. Yeah.
Instead, when he was producing, they decided, nah, this guy, you know, this guy coming back has terms, so we're going to need to send you down to the minors. And might I add, the guy that they replaced him with has been fucking horrible. For a guy who, you know, all he's really been known for is being a master of the penalty kill, essentially. And even then, this season on the penalty kill, he's been lackluster even then.
Yeah, and it's not just us. It's not just a bunch of guys, sports fans, you know, podcasters sitting around playing video games. Think about it. It affects that guy, too. Like I said, that guy who gets called up does pretty well and then gets sent back to the minors. It upsets the players, too. You know, when the team is, you know, the leadership is uncertain and they're anxious and they're making these quick decisions and not even giving a chance to see if it works, it just sounds desperate. You know, and teams do it in all the different sports. I mean, the Eagles did that all last year. Patricia, you know, hiring different coaches, dude, it all fell apart. The Bruins sound like they're just scrambling around, like they want a quick fix instead of just letting their young players, you know, you can't rebuild it overnight. Not rebuild, but you can't replace legends overnight. You got to let the young guys grow a little bit.
Well, what are your thoughts, Lou, on hockey when it comes in particular, especially if you're a team like the Bruins, where you have two young players who basically have, you know, it looked like they were going to crack the starting lineup or they were going to crack the team, I should say, to start off the season, and then one of them does. And you send the other one to the minors to start off the year. But now all of a sudden, it's like you're playing this game of sending them back and forth between the minors and the majors all year long.
Yeah, well, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, okay, everybody has a bad game. We got to shoot with the minors, and then we made a mistake. We'll send it back. You know, you're just like, you know, using the chairs around this guy. I mean, that's not how you run a team, you know. You know, one day he's in the majors, next week he's in the minors, and back again. No, that's bad management right there. So I'm not in favor of that at all. Pretty stupid.
I mean, I'll give you another example. I talked about John Beecher earlier. John Beecher, who started off, keep in mind he was a first round pick of Boston back in 2019. When they were the runner up to the Stanley Cup, he started off the season on the major league roster. In 39 games, he scored 5 goals and recorded 2 assists on the fourth line. He was probably our best fourth line performer. What happens? They decide to send him down and call up an NHL veteran instead. And basically, it's like, well, he needs more time to develop. Why are you saying he needs more time to develop when yet he's putting up numbers on your fourth line?
Yeah,
he's doing. It's like if you're doing a good job, and then someone says, you know what, Steve, we're gonna actually demote you or let you go, we wish you well. What do you mean? I did my job. I'm doing well. I just started at this new job. So then everyone else is talking about it.
It was your own personal stupidity.
Yeah, I mean, that sends a bad message to the rest. Again, these players are those guys are the soldiers. So, like, when they send them back and forth and play games with them, it's going to piss off his Bruins teammates. That's what I'm trying to say. You don't do that to players. They're working hard, they're not on yo-yo. They shouldn't go up and down to the minors. That's ridiculous. That kills people's confidence and their psyche, their mentality.
Destroy.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
Now, granted, let's keep in mind, I mean, granted, yeah, he was a -6 type player, but he's on the fourth line. These guys are supposed to be, you know, you're not going to get, odds are, you're not going to get plus players on the fourth line. It's just not going to happen. You know, there's going to be players who are going to be minuses on your team.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Jacob Lauko. Jacob Lauko has played 42 games on the fourth line for Boston. He's a -4 right now. Let's see if I can... Kevin Shattenkirk, he's on the bottom defensive pairing for Boston. He's a -3. So, I mean, there's going to be players that are going to be minuses. It's just going to happen. You know, there's not really anything that you can do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I really, also that plus-minus thing, it's almost like the PFF football ranking ratings. Like, a lot of times, let's be honest, you're as good as your teammates, right? So, if you, like you said, if he's on the fourth line, if his left winger or whoever he's with on that line, if they mess up and fall, you know, if they blow an assignment and there's a goal scored, dude, coach, I'm on the fourth line. Like, if he's doing his job, I always read into that plus-minus. It's a team sport. It's not just about that guy. So it's like those numbers can really, sometimes those numbers can really be a negative towards people where they don't deserve it. If he's playing well, you know what I mean? Plus minus, you're only as good as the other four guys in the ice too.
Right. And also, you know, I'll bring up another player. Another guy I mentioned earlier, Mason Lowry. He is a even player right now. He's a zero, basically, which means he's been on the ice for as many goals for as he has been for as many goals they've given up. He has 4 goals and 6 assists as a rookie defenseman. That's what I call a production. Now, granted, he may not have the assists that we may want, but let's keep in mind, he's an offensive type of defenseman. So you're not going to see, I mean, yeah, you're going to see the goal numbers, but you're not going to expect, like, if people are looking at his plus minuses and saying, oh, you know, he's only a zero, you know, that we can't have that on our team. You're not going to get, especially from a rookie who's literally still getting used to to playing at the NHL level, you're not going to get those big type numbers. Like, for example, Charlie McAvoy is a plus 10 on the top defensive line for the Bruins. You're not going to get those type of numbers.
Yeah, and furthermore, to your point, if you pull the plug or play with someone's mentality or their confidence, okay, you're not doing well enough, we're gonna bring you down to the minors again. It messes with those guys' heads. So long term, I think the Bruins are trying to get a quick fix. And, you know, if you mess with these guys' confidence, in 2 or 3 years when the big dogs are really retiring or moving on, like, the young guys are the big guys in a couple of years. So you don't want to play with people's confidence when it comes to pro sports or any level sports.
Very good.
But one thing I do wonder, though, I do wonder if it has to do with his contract. And I bring this up because I bring this up. The only reason why I bring this up is because I know there's a certain threshold where you end up burning a year of their entry-level contract, of their rookie deal. You burn a year of their rookie deal if they play a certain amount of games.
That's right. Yeah, that could be a big thing. And, almost like when people have options in baseball, like back and forth, the minors for a couple times.
Right.
Even if it looks like they're ready, the team still will pull them back down a level.
Now, what's different here, though, is that there's no, like, option. You know, it isn't like baseball where you can only send a player up and down so many times. The main difference here is you can send a player down as many times as you want until they are considered waiver eligible. When they're considered waiver eligible, then they'll basically be forced to have to go on waivers where any team can potentially pick them up. Kind of like baseball where a player is designated for assignment.
Oh, okay. So there's a difference there, but it's kind of the same.
I think it's more.
Except
so,
the difference
so,
here is
from a,
the,
from, yeah,
the
sorry,
difference
Steve,
here
forward.
Is if a player is claimed on waivers in the NHR in hockey, if a player is claimed on waivers, the team that they're claimed from, they don't have the opportunity to work out a trade. They're gone. Period.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
So I think that might be, I think maybe perhaps the contract kind of comes into play a little bit here for certain players. Like if they're still considered non-waiver eligible, they're going to be like, well, okay, we don't have to put you through waivers. So maybe perhaps we'll keep you, you know, we'll send you down and we'll call somebody else up that we're sure that if we have to send that person down later, that they won't get claimed on waivers. I mean, it's kind of similar to what they did with Johnny Beecher, where they decided to send down Johnny Beecher instead of Oscar Steen. Because a lot of people were thinking, oh, maybe Steen might get claimed on waivers by a team that needs a center. And that's why they sent down Beecher, because Beecher is not waiver eligible.
So it's different, the two sports, but options versus that, the time. It's still a little bit of the same where someone looks like they belong in the big leagues, but they still get sent down. And it's still tough for them. That younger player is still tough. I think mentally, you know, that means a lot to players. They get to the big dance. They got their families watching, and then, oh, I'm back down. You really don't want to do that if you don't have to.
No.
But sometimes, though, I will say, though, sometimes, especially with younger players, sometimes they may do it if say, for example, they want younger players to play more and – Let's say they have like a week. Let's say they have a week off before their next game. Let's say the minor league team is playing like twice before that during that week span. They may decide, okay, well, you know what? We're going to send you down so that you can get a little more playing time instead of sitting here waiting for this next game. We're due to play next in about a week's time. So why don't we send you down? You get you get basically the experience that you need
from the extra playing time.
And then we'll call you back up for our next game.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. And that's almost like a, you know, Rays or, you know, whatever team in the MLB, they'll send a guy down for 2 weeks and he'll make two starts instead of, languishing on the bench looking at other players play. You know, you want to keep these guys back. You don't want to bring guys up. It's not to switch sports, but I think it's applicable and important to always compare different pro sports. Like, it's the same in baseball. You know, you don't want to call up a guy and then he sits there and has two at-bats in a week. Let them play down, you know, in the minors. You always want to see guys always developing further along, not just sitting around. But, you know, for the Bruins guys that you mentioned, Steve, it sounded like the Bruins guys that you mentioned were doing really well in their roles, you know, third line, fourth line. Hey, if you're suiting up for the Boston Bruins, that's very important. And if they're doing their job, then I think that's different. Like, they should not be going up and down to the minors. You know, if they show that they're ready, let them play.
Right. But, you know, at the same time, like I said, maybe perhaps it might be some sort of situation where they're like, okay, well, we need to kind of juggle the roster a little bit. But at the same time, we don't, we want to keep you up here, but at the same time, we don't want to risk this player going on waivers.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's why as soon as one of our defensemen got injured, they immediately called up Mason Lowry right away. And, I mean, actually, let me take a look at his numbers. Since being called up, I mean, he's played, I want to say, almost half of the season already.
Yeah.
Let's see. He's played in 32 games so far in his pro career. Well, actually 33 if you count tonight's game. He's played in 33 pro games to start off his career, 4 goals, 6 assists as a rookie.
Not shabby.
I mean, for a defenseman, that's not bad at all. You know,
no.
Especially a defenseman who's, I believe he's been mostly on the bottom line. Well, actually, no, he's been on the middle line because he's been playing 16, he's been averaging almost 17 minutes of ice time per game. That's about second line defensive line time.
Yeah, so he's paired
out of the,
you know, second,
out of the three lines.
Second pairing. Yeah, second pair.
Yeah.
Pair two. Third or fourth defenseman.
Yeah.
That what you want to see. You, of course, you want to see him better. Everyone does, but it is what it is. He's not underproducing. He's producing about average quo, you know, status quo, average.
Right.
Which, for a young guy, that's great. That's a lot better than a 27-year-old.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's basically, let's put it this way, he's ahead of where he should be right now as a rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a kid who literally just made his pro debut last year coming out of college. He had played in the Frozen Four, I believe, for Ohio State.
Nice.
He had played in the Frozen Four, and then once they – or I forget if it was the Frozen Four or it was some type of tournament for college. No, it wasn't the Beanpot.
Oh, it's Bungus.
It wasn't the Beanpot, but it was some sort of tournament for college teams, and he ended up playing in it. And then when he got eliminated, the Bruins immediately signed him to his to an entry level contract, and which is basically his rookie deal. Now, I feel if the Bruins make the playoffs, I think they need to keep the young kids up on the roster.
Oh, my God. Yes. Come on. 110%.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let them grow and let them see if they can do it. And if they don't, it's a learning lesson. Don't have them in sweatpants watching the game. Have them on the ice.
I mean, I'll put it this way. The way things have been going right now, I would rather have Mason Lowry, and I've said this to fellow Bruin fans that I chat with. I would rather have Mason Lowry out there on the ice for a playoff game than to have somebody like Derek Forbert, who we're paying $3 million for to basically not play to his potential, essentially.
Of course, when in doubt, play.
And I
play the young, hungry guy with potential. Of course, go with that guy.
And
don't,
I mean, it's funny I say that though.
Well, no, I mean,
it's funny I say that though. When you consider the fact that, you know, not really playing to his potential. When you consider the fact that he's, you know, he's past the 30-year-old mark. So it's not like he's a young player anymore.
But I mean, right. We all have our favorite teams. We watch sports all day. You know, that's what we do. And, hey, I'd rather reward the hungry, you know, player who's ready to run through a wall and try to win the game versus, like, the guy who's kind of acting like a fat cat is kind of lazy. I mean, yeah, I'd go with the guy who's hungry and selfless and willing to win for the team.
Right.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's just, I don't know. You know, there's just, for some reason, certain teams make decisions like that to where, you know, a lot of it does have to do with contract related, with something contract related that like either maybe perhaps they don't want to give up, they don't want to burn a year on the kids entry level on the kids entry level contract. And just to show you how important that is, basically if you burn a year on his entry level deal, what that essentially means is he'll hit unrestricted free agency at the age of 26 instead of, for example, maybe hitting it at the age of 27,
right,
which is what the normal level is.
Yeah.
You hit it at the age of 27 instead of 26. Now, if you burn that year, that means that once the kid hits 26, whether or not it's during the season or after the season, once that kid hits the 26, the year 26, he officially becomes an unrestricted free agent.
Right.
That's the key part. Yeah, that's the key part to consider.
That's one of the things that teams look at when they decide, should we burn a year of this kid's contract, or should we send him down to the minors? Basically, make it so that, you know, he becomes a free agent at a certain age, or he becomes like, we have basically one more year of control,
yeah,
essentially, kind of stretching into baseball terms a little bit here, where,
yeah,
teams have a certain amount of years left of control over the rights to a certain player.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, speaking of waivers, we were talking about waivers. The Capitals, they have placed center Evgeny Kuznetsov on waivers after being cleared to resume practicing with the team, and he had entered the follow-up phase of the player assistance program between the NHL and the NHL Players Association. The 31-year-old instead has been placed on waivers, which means that basically what happened was that when he entered the player assistance program, his $7.8 million average annual value was taken off of their books, which basically meant that they could replace him, they could replace his contract with that cap space. And now that he's officially been transitioning back into the NHL process, now it's like, oh crap, now we got to make, his contract is going to become reactivated. So now we have to try and make some sort of moves.
Yeah.
Is essentially what's going on here with him. Now it's unknown, though, whether or not a team is going to claim him, which the deadline, I believe, let's see, Central, that's a difference of an hour, right, between Eastern and Central?
Yeah,
yep, one hour difference.
So I think he'll clear waivers at 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, which... if he does,
yeah,
clear, he can then be reassigned to the AHL's Hershey Bears, the AHL affiliate of the Washington Capitals. Now, not saying that he'll stay down there, but it sounds,
yeah,
like, according to GM Brian McClellan, he indicated that this move is about getting the player a fresh start. Now, that fresh start may end up being either through a trade or through a buyout. So it kind of sounds like maybe perhaps Kuznetsov may be on the move at some point in the near future here. Which, I mean, this is, you know, for a guy who dipped from 78 points – last season to 55 points this season. And even this season, he's been limited to just 6 goals and 11 assists in 43 games. So his numbers have been going down as he turned 31 years old. So maybe perhaps he'll be picked up by another team. But for the team that does pick him up, they're going to have to take on that $7.8 million cap hit. So it's definitely something for a team to keep in mind. I mean, he could definitely potentially be picked up for a playoff team that may be looking for some extra depth. Considering he does have term as well left, because that 7.8 mil also carries into next year as well. So technically, he'll be whatever team nabs him, they'll have him for at least one more year. But that it is a little noteworthy, especially for a team that may potentially be on a rapid rebuild, like the Washington Capitals here. I mean, you know, Washington, that's another team. You know, how we talked about last week that we may see Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, you know, you don't know how many years left that core has. It's kind of the same thing here. It's kind of the same thing here with the Washington Capitals. You know, Alexander Ovechkin, he's not getting any younger. And the decline of Evgeny Kuznetsov is not helping things. So, you know, it's definitely the way it looks, it kind of seems like the Capitals, you may see quite a bit of movement potentially from them. I don't know if it'll be at the deadline or if it'll be in free agency, but you may see quite a bit of movement from them coming up. And also, speaking of the Pittsburgh Penguins, it looks like, from all accounts, that Jake Gensel and Riley Smith will be on the move at the trade deadline, from what it sounds like. All indications are that the Penguins are basically going to want to get as much as they can for both players. Especially not just Gensel, but Riley Smith, who literally is coming off of a Stanley Cup win last year with the Vegas Golden Knights, and he was traded. He was traded in the postseason to the Pittsburgh Penguins as part of a salary cap move. But Gensel, he did take part in today's morning skate in a non-contact jersey, as he's currently on long-term injured reserve with an upper body injury. And he is eligible to return until March 10th, which is 2 days after the trade deadline. And it is worth noting as well that they are receiving strong interest in Riley Smith. So That is definitely something to keep in mind moving forward for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Riley Smith, who reached the 50-point mark in 4 of his 6 seasons with the Vegas Golden Knights, this season, his offensive numbers are down only 10 goals and 15 assists in 51 games, and he has a $5 million price tag as well, a $5 million cap hit. But from what it sounds like the Penguins are receiving a lot of calls on him, even more than they're receiving on Jake Gensel. So it sounds like, for the most part, that both players will be moved at the deadline. And this will essentially I mean, just based off of potentially what teams will be willing to pay for potential rentals like these two, the Penguins, they could receive quite a bit of a return.
Yeah.
So something to keep an eye on, especially for Pittsburgh Penguin fans. Some other bits of news around the league before we move over to Major League Baseball. Vladimir Tarasenko, he's another person that is looking at potentially being moved at the trade deadline, and from all indications, it sounds like he is officially willing to waive his no-trade clause. So that is a player who most likely will be flipped over to another team from the Ottawa Senators. The LA Kings, it looks like Adrian Kemp, one of their right wingers, he is expected to return during the regular season. So, because he wasn't placed on long-term injured reserve. So because of that, they are expecting him to return at some point this season. So with that being said, it looks like they will get some much-needed reinforcements moving forward here. For the Vegas Golden Knights, Captain Mark Stone is expected to miss the balance of the regular season, and he is listed as questionable to return during the Stanley Cup playoffs, according to TSN's Darren Drager. He has missed four games with an upper body injury, which is reported to be a lacerated spleen. How do you lacerate your spleen?
Well, funny 20-second story. Even playing football in the playground in middle school, Steve, I literally jumped after someone. I was wearing like a dress code, like private school, middle school bullshit, whatever. Pardon my French. And literally got kicked in the spleen, like by someone's like loafer. It's a lacerated spleen. It's right under your kidney. It can be very painful. I couldn't run around for like 6 months. It's a very legit, not the best description of what happened, but yeah, that's a legit. The spleen is like a crucial organ. So my doctor hat is coming back off. Don't worry.
Oh, no, I'm just surprised. I'm like, how can you lacerate a spleen?
Yeah, well, it's tucked. It's one of those internal organs right near your rib cage under your heart, and it's underrated. Apparently, I didn't even know what the heck they. I can hardly still spell it. But I was like, spleen? What is a spleen? Yeah, it's right underneath the. That rib cage right there. If you kick it, if you get the hit there, it can be really, it's a long-term injury. You know, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months.
Yeah, at least.
A lot bigger than them. Yeah.
No, I'm just surprised. You know, I didn't think about, when you think of a lacerated spleen, I didn't even think of it. I didn't even think, how can you possibly lacerate your spleen? But lo and behold, it sounds like that, obviously he's on long-term, he's not on long-term injured reserve, because they placed him on standard injured reserve. However, first line center Jack Eichel is on long-term injured reserve. However, it sounds like he will return to the lineup within the upcoming days. This may explain why the Vegas Golden Knights are currently after Jake Guentzel on the trade market. Because losing Mark Stone, that's actually a pretty significant loss offensively for them to lose a player like Stone for the rest of the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Golden Knights, not only are they active on that, I wouldn't be surprised if they're active on a couple of other players moving forward here as well.
That's a big loss. I wouldn't be shocked if they're, picking up the phone, making some calls.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised at all at this point. One of the players that will not be traded, Marc-Andre Fleury, is expected to remain with the Minnesota Wild past the trade deadline, as he reportedly had said that he would prefer to remain with the Wild as they attempt to stay in the Western Conference playoff race. As such, it appears unlikely that he will waive his no-movement clause ahead of March 8th's trade deadline, and he will thus finish off the season in Minnesota. So that's yet another key guy who is off the market, and that may be why we're seeing such talks around a guy like Jacob Markstrom, who may be gaining or who may be getting a lot of interest from other teams as we move forward here. Let's see. Also, actually, I think that's it for the hockey news. Going over to the NFL for a second here, Cam Newton, he was involved in a brawl at a youth football event over the last couple of days. And this whole thing went viral. And basically what happened was apparently he was talking a whole bunch of shit to two youth coaches on the sidelines following his team's loss to those two youth coaches teams, to the team of those two youth coaches. And apparently that's what started the entire brawl, was he had been talking a whole bunch of shit, and then the coaches claimed that Newton grabbed one of the brothers, which then started the brawl. And Newton claimed he clarified on his podcast that he wasn't fighting kids in the video, as some first assumed. He said those were grown men, former coaches, for his youth football organization, C1N. And
I don't know about this story,
basically, he said that he hopes to set a better example for the youth moving forward. He even stated that he could play the victim, and he's not going to do that. He's going to hold himself to that same standard. And he said it just goes to show you got to always stay in control of your emotions, which obviously he was not in control of during that fight. But still, I mean, it's a pretty ugly look.
I see three pretty athletic dudes that are playing, I guess, against his team, that jump him. Cam is not the aggressor at all. That's why Cam Newton has not been arrested. So I would pump the brakes. I mean, I'm just saying, you think Cam is walking around trying to fight 17-year-olds? He could be. He might not be the best quarterback at throwing a spiral, but he's not that stupid. So he hasn't been charged for anything. He literally defended himself. So people want to talk shit. I mean, the coaches he's playing against, I'm just saying, he wasn't walking around starting a fight. He got jumped. He had three people come at him, throwing fists at him. And he really, that's what I saw. That's what I've been reading about the whole situation. I mean, it's not like, I just don't see that he's really in the wrong.
Right, well,
They were looking for a money grab. Obviously, you know, certain people want to fight or sleep with. If you're a groupie or a girl, like, they gravitate towards people with $100 million. So those kids were looking for a big payday. The kids got arrested. Cam Newton didn't. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big Cam Newton fan, but I didn't think he did that much wrong.
Right. You know, I shouldn't say that he was in the wrong, but basically, the understanding of it was that he apparently was talking a whole bunch of shit, and that's what caused the whole fight to happen, essentially.
There you go. Yeah, then
was that
Yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, then it makes a little bit more sense. But, yeah, it's like, yeah, he's as a target, you know, when you're making that much money, you shouldn't be talking to anyone. But, you know, Cam Newton likes to do stuff like that. It was just weird, though. I saw, like, three kids, like, jumping a grown man. And the guy's used to, like, running over, you know, linebackers and DNs in the NFL. He's not scared. Like, he was basically just, like, throwing little people off of him.
Right. By the way, Lou, some kind of shocking news here. According to Ian Rappaport, left tackle Tyron Smith is unlikely to return to the Cowboys next season.
Well, after 13 years or anything, and you're on the decline now, it doesn't really shock me, to be honest.
No.
You know, it's, you know, the upset loss in the playoffs. So I think there might have been a tail there as well. So while it may surprise most people, it doesn't surprise me. I think Dallas is ready to move on from him anyway.
Well, it kind of makes you wonder how they're going to address his absence, if they're going to go through the draft or if they're going to go through free agency. But he will leave Dallas with 8 Pro Bowls as well as 2 first-team All-Pro recognitions during his Dallas career. Now, it's unfortunate because injuries have plagued him since the 2016 season, and he has yet to appear in more than 13 games over each of the last 8 seasons. But when healthy, he remains one of the best blindside blockers in the league, as he had a Pro Football Focus pass block grade of 88.6 last season. So, if anything, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots look at potentially grabbing him, because they do need a little bit of an offensive line makeover, so to speak. And now, granted, obviously, you know, they're not going to be going to the Super Bowl anytime soon, but you know, it would help, especially if they're going to bring in, from all indications, it sounds like they are going to go quarterback with their number 3 pick instead of Marvin Harrison. It would help to have an experienced blocker on the blind side.
All right, that's the most important thing in the world to a young quarterback coming in, Steve. I mean, think about it. If you have Drake May, I'm not a big fan. The Trubisky, North Carolina, small market flashbacks. You do land a Jaden Daniels. Yeah, you're darn right. You want a bookend tackle. You want a veteran. That guy's been through battles and wars. I mean, think about if you draft a quarterback, Steve, you want an awesome, awesome, established, you know, reputable a guy like that, Tyson Smith, the Patriots, that'd be a home run. If you have a rookie quarterback, the most important position besides a receiver maybe would be a guy protecting his ass, protecting the blind side. So, yeah, I mean, Patriots, that makes way too much sense.
Yeah, it would definitely be something to keep an eye on, especially for a team like the Patriots. If they're looking at bringing in somebody like a Jaden Daniels or a Drake May or whoever they go with, it would definitely be somebody to keep an eye on moving forward here. Also, a report out of ESPN from Adam Schefter, the 49ers, they are expected to hire former Chargers head coach Brandon Staley as their assistant head coach. Staley had previously interviewed for the Niners defensive coordinator vacancy, but instead that went to their defensive passing game coordinator, Nick Sorensen. So instead, he will basically get the role that Anthony Lynn had held for the last two seasons as the assistant head coach of the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, they could maybe, I mean, Staley's a bright mind. Maybe they could have him in charge of teaching the players about the overtime rules. Just an idea.
Yeah.
You know, what I find funny is that he's always been talked about as being such a good offensive coach, but yet he interviewed to be the defensive coach.
Yeah. No, and I've always believed that the 49ers coach is a little bit overrated, and he's, what is he, 0-5 in championship games? No, sorry, but what is it, Super Bowls? He's 0-3. He's got a bad track record. As far I think the Niners coach is very overrated. So yeah, I mean, adding the Chargers coach is a good move. I think that he could be the eventual head coach of the Niners.
Potentially. I don't really see the Niners moving away from Kyle Shanahan anytime soon, though.
Yeah.
Shanahan. That was the name I was looking for. I'm sorry. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Not knowing, the overtime rules, it's a damning statement on behalf of the Niners staff. Give anyone, as coaches, imagine McCaffrey, Ayuk, the talent they have. Get to that game. I mean, the Niners have fallen short an awful lot lately. I mean, I would think they're looking at the coach a little bit. Maybe I'm stupid, but that's a damn good roster. It's time for them to win.
Yeah.
Right. No, I agree. What are your thoughts, Lou, on the chart or the Niners bringing in Brandon Staley to be an assistant head coach.
Well, first of all, I don't think it was right you fired after just 1 year. I mean, your staff did take the 49ers to the playoffs and the Super Bowl. Okay, you made that one blunder that did cost you, but still, I think it was premature that they just fired half the staff in that game. But, this is going to take the next one potentially win a Super Bowl this time. Maybe it was the right move. But I still say that was totally wrong. Yes, you lost the biggest game of the century in good old fashion. But this is the move that they had to make, quote-unquote, a football decision or a business decision. Okay, fine. But I do not agree with the decision of firing.
I'll quickly add to Steve. When you add another head coach to the staff right after you lose in a really, bizarre fashion in the Super Bowl, that's not a really vote of confidence for Shanahan. That's telling Shanahan, get your ass in gear, dude. We're about to fire you.
Okay, you called the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Guess what? You're fired. You bum. You bum.
Almost cost him a Super Bowl. I'm a little bit tired of listening about Shanahan about all his great play calling. I mean, he's had the best roster for 3 years? Show me the money. Show the results.
Yeah.
You don't think ownership knows what they know what message they're sending
they
to Shanahan. We're hiring another coach to be your assistant. Like Shanahan, you're in the hot seat. Someone else is on your staff, ready to take your job. That's what they're doing. They're letting the fire in the back.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is definitely worth noting that, that should, if anything, be sending a message to Shanahan in particular.
I've just never bought into, all the big talk about, Shanahan's guru. Yeah, of course. but like where are the results? At the end of the day, season's awesome, but like you have so many good players. The Niners have the most talent offensively in the league.
Yeah.
So it's like, show us what, you know, now they hired another head coach to be his assistant. Read the tea leaves. They might replace him with that guy.
If you believe that stuff, go ahead.
I'm not a Buddha guy, but, you know, read between the lines.
Well, do whatever Buddha you do.
Right. I mean, it's definitely worth, you know, worth keeping an eye on, in particular, the fact that it should definitely send a message.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Did you think that Niners were running on all cylinders, you know, coaching-wise, play call-wise?
No, especially after the overtime.
I thought they could have been up 20 by the Chiefs, but they were kind of like, yeah, you know, close all game. It was a weird game to watch.
Yeah, it was definitely weird. Especially when you consider the type of play caller, you know, that Shanahan normally is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But regardless, though, I mean, it's definitely something to keep an eye on specifically over there in San Francisco, because, you know, this could be a case of San Francisco essentially going all in particular, if you want to put it that way. You know, that them going all in to try and actually make sense. Because remember what I said in a previous show that we did? I said that it could end up becoming where they have to make a they're going to have to make a decision, like, okay, are we going to still invest in these guys or in what's his face?
Shanahan or Debo?
What's his name? Brock Purdy. Are we going to still invest in Brock Purdy, or are we going to, you know, this could be their way of basically saying, okay, we're going to try and bring in as much help as possible, but if this doesn't work,
yep.
Then,
Steve, I agree with you.
You know,
I was just going to say, you know, you could fire Shanahan tomorrow. You could bring in a new quarterback in the draft. You still have McCaffrey, Ayuk, Kittle, Debo Samuel. You have a killer, kick-ass defense. So it's like, is it? Now it's like becoming, okay, they got to the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. I give Shanahan like a D or a C. You know, obviously the overtime rules. Are you kidding me? A D is generous. I might give him an F tomorrow. I'm feeling pretty good right now. But like, he did not deserve a good grade in the Super Bowl. So now you're wasting McCaffrey's years. You're wasting this defense years. You could bring in someone else, and then flip the switch and maybe have a Cousins or someone else. I'm not sold on Purdy. We already discussed that a lot, but I think the deeper issue is Shanahan the guy. I had a lot of problems with him. The Super Bowl, I thought he got out-coached a lot. And in games like that, every game, every play counts. Andy Reid dominated him.
Yeah, it's definitely something to take note of in particular, especially when you had them going up against a more veteran type of team.
Yeah.
The fact that they were out coached like they were.
That's it. I mean, that's got to be a cause for concern. I mean, think about the, you know, San Fran owner. Dude, we were there. Like, San Fran probably man for man in the roster. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, they're probably more talented than the Chiefs, right? And
yeah.
They lost that game. I mean, that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. They might not
right.
ever get – McCaffrey might not ever get to the Super Bowl again. It happens in life, but, like, once you're there, you have to make the most of it. I felt like Shanahan really let the crowd down.
No, I would agree, you know, because it kind of seemed like he choked, essentially.
So, like, all this talk about, like, guru, I'm like, what does he really want? I just don't see it with Shanahan. He's not an elite coach. He's good, but, I mean, come on. There's a lot of good coaches.
Right. I mean, basically, there's nothing much that we can really say. He basically choked. Where, you know, he's had so many opportunities. That was, what, his third opportunity? Second as a head coach, third as a coach in general to, you know, to try and get a Super Bowl title. And... I mean, he choked. I don't know if there's anything more we can basically say about that.
And
no.
I don't have a vendetta of the guy. I mean, I wish everyone well, but, like, look at his results. Look at the resume. Like, yeah, he fell short. And, I mean, this
right.
I mean, how do your players not know about overtime? And then everyone, you know, oh, actually, we knew. No, when they were interviewed after the game, they're like, we didn't prepare for this. How does that happen? I mean, that's the most damning thing of all.
What you're basically saying is we weren't even prepared.
Right.
And McCaffrey, like Steve, like you said, they were the most talented people. I know that. I was surprised when the Niners got their ass kicked by the Eagles. You know, last year. Like,
right.
They've always been the best team. I don't doubt that. I never talked shit about the Niners. Said, "Oh, they're not good." I always knew they're great. I questioned their coaching, and we saw it. We saw it in the Super Bowl.
Right. It just wasn't. It wasn't. They just weren't prepared. Just plain and simple. I mean, I don't know what else we could possibly say about them, but it just wasn't good, period.
And imagine, real quick, just imagine, like, Debo going back. He complains about, you know, the weather. He's always, you know, oh, Debo this, Debo that. He hates the Eagles. He hates the Cowboys. Good, Debo. Debo didn't do anything in the Super Bowl. But, like, imagine handling the Eagles coming back now. Bosa, Debo. Ayuk, they're all unhappy right now. And you know what? You know where it is? The head coach. So next year, it's like, that could blow up. I don't think they're going to go back to the Super Bowl.
Not in the near future.
No, I mean, I would definitely be surprised.
Yeah.
I would definitely be surprised if they were to... Like there would have to be a lot of things that would have to go right, essentially, for them to make it back.
And there's a lot of drama going on that we don't know about with them.
Yeah,
that was kind of, you know, not to sound, but it is what it is. That was kind of their shot. They had it too,
so to speak. Yeah. But, I mean, who knows? Maybe, perhaps, you know, they finally, depending on what happens, you know, moving forward into the rest of you know, into next season, depending on what they do on the whether it's the trade market or whether it's the free agent market, you know, who knows? They could end up doing something that maybe perhaps it completely turns their whole entire season around, or not their season, but I mean, you know, maybe perhaps it turns around their entire franchise, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, they still have those incredible players. Don't get me wrong. I think they got to figure out something else, though.
But, right.
I mean, they still have a top. I mean, again, I always say that it's annoying, but, like, you know, Madden, or, like, if you're playing video games, it's like the Niners have, like, the best assortment of talent in the world for the Super Bowl. So what are we doing wrong? Well, look at the coaching.
Yeah.
Bingo, yeah. I mean, all you have to do, you look at their coaching staff, and it's clear as day, you know, it's not up to par, essentially. You know, there's not that level of experience, essentially, that you're looking for.
Yeah, and I mean, not for nothing, you know, I don't think I would be, you know, if I were a, you know, 79-year-old praying for a, you know, Super Bowl title, if I look at, you know, the new coach on the Niners, if I were a Niners fan, you know, Shanahan's got the straight lid. He looks like he's a member of Limp Bizkit. It's like, dude, what are you, like a fat? I always say that, man. Like, look at, you know, McDaniels in Miami wearing sweatpants, you know, hanging out, vaping. Like, dude, I don't know if that's the best leader to win a Super Bowl. I've said that all the time about Shanahan. He doesn't seem like a Super Bowl coach. That, you know, that's my two cents.
Right. Let's see. The Patriots, they released cornerback J.C. Jackson after Jackson played in 15 games over the last two seasons, and he was in the middle of his second stint with the Patriots this season. Says here that he had signed a 5-year, $82.5 million contract with the Chargers during the 2020, but he was only limited to just 5 games due to injuries with the Chargers. And he ended up being benched in week 6 of last season against the Broncos, and then soon after he was traded to the Patriots. Now, and this is my opinion here, I have a feeling he will be re-signed to New England, but it will be under a cheaper contract.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, this is kind of similar, I feel, to what they did with Jalen Mills last season, where, you know, they were looking for somebody to fill in for Devin McCourty, who ended up retiring. And then they released Jalen Mills, and it's like, well, what the hell are you doing? That was McCourty's replacement right there. And now basically what you're doing is now you got to find a replacement for two people. And then they ended up, a couple of days later, they ended up re-signing Jalen Mills to a slimmer-type contract. So I kind of wonder if that might be something similar that they're doing here with J.C. Jackson, because the only other thing that I look at is maybe perhaps because Bill Belichick's system is no longer the primary system in New England, that maybe perhaps he doesn't fit DeMarcus Covington's system. Basically, as defensive coordinator.
Great point, Steve. I would say, though, I mean, a good player is going to play well anywhere. So maybe it's not a system fit, but, I mean, that's a lifelong Patriot. So,
right.
Maybe they bring him back on the cheap. We'll see.
It is possible. It is possible that they could bring him back along on the cheap because, I mean, he basically robbed the money from from the Chargers, you know. So he's already got his bag. So I don't know. It remains to be seen when it comes to him. There is one other move that was made. The Eagles, they released safety Kevin Byard, which would save them around $13 million in salary cap space for next season. He was pretty quiet in his 2 months after being acquired by the Eagles towards the trade deadline. And looks like he will be in line for a short-term contract with another team this offseason. What are your thoughts on that, Alex? Are you surprised at all by that?
Teacher, why'd you select me? Oh, I'm
well, because
fed
you're
up.
An Eagles fan.
No, I know. I'm kidding. Uh-huh. My God. He was so slow in molasses. Yeah, it was like he was moving in quicksand. That's why Vrabel, the Eagles were desperate. That's what I said. When it comes to the Bruins, don't make quick moves just to get someone. Like, if you want to make a move, someone's going to give you someone that's not worthy. So he was so slow and so terrible. That's why Vrabel in Tennessee gave up, you know, a 5-time Pro Bowl. Or look at the stats, whatever. He was moving in mud. Wow. Yeah. Vrabel got one over on us. We gave him 2 draft picks for him. He was terrible. Just shot. 30 years old, done. That's what I'm saying. The movement, the speed, it drops up a cliff. Like you were saying, Steve. When guys are done, they don't even know it. He could not move. He was getting lit up.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, I was kind of surprised by what Philly gave up for him to begin with, because I kind of thought that maybe perhaps they could have gotten him for cheaper. So I was pretty surprised when I saw that that's what the price was.
But it was like, you know, what were they, like 8-3 or something? Like they were riding high, still like fake. You know, fake contenders. So, you know, they made a move. They needed safety. They brought him in. He was miserable. He got toasted every week. Happy trails, son. I wish him well, but like, yeah, he's not going to be a starting safety. I don't think so. He was so shot. Sometimes, you know, Father Tom's undefeated.
The Buccaneers, they have released Shaq Barrett, or Shaquille Barrett, I should say, after spending 5 years in Tampa, and he won a Super Bowl, of course, with the Tom Brady Buccaneers back in 2020. Coming off of a down year in Tampa, as the 3 tackles of loss was the lowest mark of his entire 9-year NFL career. He was graded 34th out of 222 qualifying edge players, though. So it'll be interesting to see that, you know, he'll probably see multiple interest from multiple teams seeking edge help this offseason, from what it looks like. Speaking of the Eagles, the Rams are expected to hire former Eagles defensive coordinator Sean Desai in a senior defensive role, which is eerily similar to what Matt Patricia was hired to before he ended up ultimately becoming the defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. Oh my God! I just had a pocket there. Holy hell! All right, on to our going over to Major League Baseball here. Obviously, we have spring training going on right now, but we do have a few signings to announce here. First, the Giants. They signed Matt Chapman to a 3-year, $54 million guarantee. And also it says here that he can opt out after each of the next 2 seasons. it says here. He'll make $20 million this season, followed by $18 million next season and $16 million in the final season as player options, it says here.
Right.
For an average annual value of $18 million. I mean, four-time Gold Glove winner, you know, definitely somebody that is worth it for the Giants. It's also worth noting that the Giants do remain involved as well on Blake Snell. So that's definitely, you know, that's somebody that they could potentially look at as well moving forward for their starting rotation. But, it just goes to show that even though it might be spring training, you know, there are still teams that are still making moves. As a matter of fact, you know, one player who surprisingly is still a free agent is Jordan Montgomery. World Series winner Jordan Montgomery. Very surprising that he's even still that he's still on the free agent market. I would have thought that somebody would have picked him up by now, but apparently not. Also, the LA Dodgers, they officially signed Enrique Hernandez to a one-year extension. Basically, they re-signed him, I should say, to a one-year deal. And in order to do so, they ended up trading Manuel Margot, infield prospect Rane Doncon, and cash in exchange for minor league shortstop Noah Miller. And also it says here that that LA is covering $6 million of Margot's $10 million salary. This was LA basically begging the Twins, here, just take this guy. We want to re-sign one of our mainstays, so can you please just take this guy? We'll give you extra incentive to take him.
Please just take him. Please.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's basically what they essentially begged them to take Manuel Margot and his contract off of the books.
Do society a favor.
Just so that they could re-sign Kike Hernandez. Let's be honest here. At this point in his career, he's basically going to be relegated to being a bench player after the horrible atrocity that he was for Boston.
He's one of the guys. He'll get a one-year deal for life. Boston brought it back, right? Is he back in Boston now, Kiki?
No, he's in. He's back in L.A.
He's someone else's problem.
I wonder why.
Yeah, he's back. He's back. He's back in L.A. L.A. reacquired him as part of their run towards a potential World Series title last year. Apparently, they felt that he would put them over the hump. Also this week, the Cubs, they re-signed Cody Bellinger to a three-year deal that includes player option years for years 2 and 3. It says here that he is guaranteed $80 million. He'll be paid $30 million for the upcoming season, $30 million for 2025, and $20 million for 2026, depending on if he decides to exercise the years on those two years. So pretty expensive for the Cubs, but I mean, Actually, yeah, you know, pretty expensive for a guy who batted 307 with 26 homers. I don't know about that. I mean, you know, that kind of makes you wonder what could Justin Turner have gotten? I mean, he hit close to 26 homers last year. Yeah. Now, granted, Bellinger is a hell of a lot younger than him, but I mean, Bellinger gets $80 million for 26 homers, and what's his name got? What, 10? I think $10 million, something like that, or maybe 15. I mean, doesn't that seem a little lopsided to you guys?
Yeah, it does.
Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be a discrepancy. Bellinger is also represented by Boris, so that's going to be a tough thing. He's always going to, you know, try to, you know, multiply that contract worth. So, I mean, I always say stay away from Boris. Right? Now, you look at Boris' players, though. You have, you know, Bellinger, Snell, Alonso, Matt, like, it's poisonous. But eventually, people, you know, they meet in the halfway. Meet in the middle. Negotiate.
True. Yeah, that's definitely one of those things to keep in mind as well. Still, though, I mean, just wow.
Yeah.
I mean, just the discrepancy, and I guess it really does matter who your manager is or who your agent is.
Yeah, it's crazy.
When it comes to getting these type of deals.
Bellinger and, you know, Boris settled for what? They settled. Imagine that. Settling for what? $30 million a year.
$80 million.
Oh, yeah. Really tough. I'm going to settle for that. Jesus. Yeah. Boris.
Yeah. Well, it makes you wonder what was his original asking price, the fact that he had to settle for $80
million. I
can't
tell by
now. It's unbelievable.
Oh,
yeah, Boris is an absolute. I hate the word. You know, everyone does, but like an absolute cancer to MLB,
right?
To sport, to everything, to life. Boris is like, he will hold out and try to, you know, negotiate everything to the last core. Where like, all right, I'll give him the money. He's the opposite of like what the game is about to be, what it's supposed to be.
Let's see, the St. Louis Cardinals, they officially signed Brandon Crawford to a major league deal. Did say that they would have to make a 40-man roster move. Crawford will make $2 million under the one-year deal. You know, I believe he's a guy that has really gone downhill over his last few years, but also I believe as well that's because he's been getting older too.
Well,
obviously, you know, he's a former two-time World Series champion with the San Francisco Giants. Not to mention all of the offensive production that he had put up with the Giants, but. It kind of sucks, though, that at the tail end of his career, he's having to settle for signing with the St. Louis Cardinals, a team that's going to be nowhere near the playoffs anytime soon.
Yeah, he's going to have to back up one of the St. Louis Cardinals' best prospects is Mason Wynn. And, yeah, Crawford's going to play maybe, two games a week. Not the way you want to go out.
No.
Especially somebody as accomplished as him.
Yeah.
We can put it that way.
I would have thought,
with somebody as accomplished as him, it's kind of surprising that, you know, he would that he's basically been relegated now to just a obviously a bench player, but like maybe a platoon player or something.
Yeah. I mean, Cardinals invested in, I think a first or second round pick. Mason Wynn's like an awesome young shortstop. So, like, when he comes on the Cardinals, he's not starting. He'll play, like, once a week. Austin Gray.
Yeah. Let's see. Anything? No, I covered that stuff last week. I'm sorry. Going back to the NFL here. This was a bit of a surprise when I read it. According to multiple NFL experts, three front office executives told the Boston Globe that the Patriots may be able to get a fifth round pick for Mac Jones. And I bring this up because I consider it a surprise when you consider the type of player that he's been throughout his time as a member of the New England Patriots.
Let's be honest, it hasn't been pretty.
No.
Do you think do you think other guys are knocking down the door? Oh, we want Mac Jones. Those picks are take what you can. And no, I don't mean to disparage and talk shit about Mac, but like, it hasn't been pretty. So they'd be lucky to get a couple picks or a pick and just move on. That experiment bombed. And they have to move
on. You know, what this basically states is that they are going to move on. The fact that they're already talking about what they're going to get for him.
He's almost like a better version of Zach Wilson, who should have, already moved on. I mean, it's got to be, like, there's a point where, like, you're not going to play well for our team. We're going to, almost do you a favor, start somewhere else. So, I mean, I get a fourth, fifth, call it a death.
Yeah, no, I agree. At this point, it really it looks like, if anything, I wouldn't be surprised if Bailey Zappe is gone, too. Or if anything, maybe Zappe will be – well, actually, no. Zappe won't be the third quarterback because they already re-signed that guy that was the third quarterback to end this past season. So, if anything
– I mean, Steve, imagine if you're a new coach. As a new case, Mayo, do you want, like, no offense to them, they're not going to be the next Tom Brady. Do you want them around? Start everything clean. Wipe the slate, wipe the counter off.
Somebody for a long time.
He's going to want all of his own guys in. They're going to draft the quarterback, I think. Like, start over.
Right.
Don't leave, like, the leftovers. Wipe the slate, wipe the counter off, and start over. I mean, is that good for him. What's that upside? He's gonna be like a Minshew, Gardner Minshew.
You just take it down the end.
Back quarterback.
The whole
year,
he gets far.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it is worth noting as well that you take a look at who they have right now. On the in the quarterback room, assuming they're going to take a quarterback in the draft, and so basically, if they take a quarterback in the draft, the rumor right now is that they're going to take a quarterback, and they will basically what they'll end up doing essentially. Is they'll sign a veteran quarterback to either start or be the backup, depending on what they decide to do with, depending on who they take. If they take Drake May, if they take Jaden Daniels, you know, there is a question of whether or not they would have that specific quarterback start. It's entirely possible that they could the certain quarterback sit.
Steve, obviously, Steve, very knowledgeable, you know, Patriots, passionate. Who do you prefer? If they have a choice of, you know, that's saying, you know, if you want quarterback, who do you prefer, Drake May or Jaden Davis?
Just my opinion, I always go with the SEC. And the reason why I say that is, you know, it's just like basketball. You know, the obviously the SEC is the hardest conference to play in, regardless of what sport, regardless of, you know, it's the hardest conference to play in. And you saw that when you compare the numbers that Jaden Daniels put up compared to the numbers that Drake May put up, I mean, to me, I don't think there's a question. I would go with Jaden Daniels. And also, he's the Heisman Trophy winner, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I believe so.
So, I mean, you got to go with him. I don't see how you can't.
As I see, you know, Giants, there's some teams sniffing around trying to move up. Got to get your guy at number three. I mean, you got it. You can't move around. You can't drop down. You can't trade your pick for more picks. My belief is, you know, get the guy. You need a quarterback. This is your time. You know, next year you might be seventh. You have a top three pick. Get the damn quarterback.
Right. Now, I did hear, though, there is who was it that they were going after? I heard Michael Penix apparently had a good combine.
Yeah.
That could be somebody. Maybe perhaps they look at targeting somebody like Michael Penix, and maybe perhaps they end up trading down.
Yeah. Or, you know, the old, you know, you wait for him in the second, he might not be there. So it's kind of like one of those guys, he's a polarizing prospect, right? He was like top five.
Right.
Now suddenly around, it's dangerous. You know, the Falcons, you can name, you know, 12 teams right now that would love a young quarterback. So it's pretty dangerous to dance around and not just get him.
Right. Now, it is worth noting, though, that most of the big-time quarterbacks like Caleb Williams, Drake May – well, actually, I don't know. Maybe Drake May did participate. But Jaden Daniels didn't really – or he didn't get measured at the combine. I don't know if he threw. I don't know if he threw at all at the combine, but he didn't take his measurements and whatnot, and he would prefer to have it done on at their pro day for LSU. So I don't know if any of the other big name quarterbacks are doing the same thing, but that could be potentially why maybe Penix shined as the top quarterback this in the combine. That it could potentially be because, well, you didn't have Caleb Williams there, you didn't have Drake May, you didn't have Jaden Daniels, you know, doing everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Kim. His dad is trying to say, we want a stake in the ownership. We want to be an owner if you're drafted. Are you kidding me? This guy's gotten buzzed. I'm talking about red flags. The red flags are waving. I would never draft that guy. Watch that guy. That guy's going to be buzzed. Telling you.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. No. I mean, you take a look at how he handled one of his losses this season, where he basically cried into his mother's into his mother's lap.
Was he?
But, and I mean, I know what they say. They say, oh, he was, you know, there's nothing wrong with showing emotion. Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you don't see players crying like a little bitch after a loss.
And Steve, to build on your point, like the dad's like demanding, like we need ownership or the Jets or the, you know, he named teams. I won't go to the Bears, dude. At a certain point, it's like, why are you like doing this? Like this guy's got some mental issues. Like I don't ever see that guy doing well in the NFL.
Right. No, I agree. At this point, I agree. You know, it just he may have the physical tools and everything, but just the way that USC completely fell apart last season, it doesn't, in my opinion, it doesn't bode well for somebody like him at the major league level.
And then he's demanding stuff. Like, who are you? Like, you don't control the NFL. When we're coming to the NFL, we need this, this, this. Like, who are you? He's not Michael Jordan. He's not Kobe. Like, slow down. No, he's going to be
right.
I mean, he's not going to be a productive NFL player. I can see it.
Yeah.
I mean, let's bring this up. You know, Jim has mentioned when he's been on here that he sees Drake May as a bust. Who do you think will be the bigger bust in the NFL, Drake May or Caleb Williams?
Drake May, because I see Trubisky. I see North Carolina. I see a lack of I see a lack of competition. Yeah. I don't see the SEC. I mean, this guy's, you know, everyone, you know, look at a girl. But look at the numbers. I don't see Drake May doing like does. I don't see that in me. I see him as a bust.
Well, you know,
yeah, that's
true. The top players usually, you know, they look good on paper. You read their accolades when they're done, but they tend to be a bust most of the time. So I wouldn't be surprised if Williams starts to be the bigger bust.
Yeah, they can bust. They can bust. Lose right. They can both.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, look at who he had as an offensive coordinator. He had Cliff Kingsbury, who everybody, you know, he's supposed to be an offensive guru. And basically, the more that the season went, it's like the further they collapsed this season.
Yep. Told you.
So I definitely think that's worth noting.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't really believe in them either one long term. The one guy I love is Jaden Neal.
Yeah. Oh no, I agree. I definitely agree.
The Patriots get him. I think the Redskins, the Commanders might get him there at two. I would move a future pick in a couple different things. Get your man. I mean, If you're the Commanders, move up one pick, get Daniel.
Yeah.
That's the one sure shot, I think, out of these quarterbacks.
I would move up if it meant getting – if it meant – let's say the Bears take either Marvin Harrison Jr. or they take Caleb Williams with the number one pick.
Move up.
I think it would be worth it. If I was the Patriots, Even if it was just moving up one pick, I think that would be worth it for a guy like Jaden Daniels.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's only one pick. It's also your friendship the next 10 years. Hey, you
exactly.
Read the Arco, Bill. Steve, you read the Arco. Bill was saying. Belichick was saying. Jaden Daniels was the guy. You read that. He was saying that was going to be the next pick. Make it happen.
And it makes me wonder though, will Gerard Mayo follow that philosophy, or does he value somebody else?
Make the pick. That should be a no-brainer.
Right, I agree.
Right.
It should be a no-brainer.
Yeah,
I mean, if you got, the quarterback is the most important position.
Before I get cut off, good night.
All right, everybody have a great weekend. Thank you to Lou, to Alex, and Diane for joining me tonight. A reminder, Survivor fans, the recap show will be on Thursday night for Survivor 46. We will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Have a great weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night.